Taita took Nefer and Merrin into the desert, 3 days' travel through the harsh and beautiful land. He led them to the hidden valley, where the black liquid oozed to the surface through a deep cleft in the rock. It was the same thick, tarry substance that they'd used to set alight the jackal's fur on the night raid at Thane. They filled the clay pots they had brought with them and returned to the workshop at Galala. Taita refined the black liquid, boiling it down over a slow fire until it felt slippery as fine silk between the fingers. It will lubricate the wheel hub smoother and longer than clarified pig's lard or any other concoction. It will give you an advantage of 50 paces in 1,000. Perhaps the difference between success or failure, or even life or death. Nefer was inclined to run the royal chariot on the red road, but Taita said, "Do you really want to ride in a golden sarcophagus?" "Well, the gold work weighs only 2 tiles. You weighed it yourself." "It might just as well be 200 when you get out there." Taita went over every one of the 105 chariots they'd exhumed from the sand, selected 10, and stripped them down. He weighed the chassis and tested the strength of the joints in the carriage work. He spun the wheels on their hubs, judging by eye the slightest wobble in their rotation. At last he made his final choice. He modified the hub assembly on the chosen vehicle so that the wheels were held by a single bronze pin that could be removed with a mallet blow.
When he reassembled the chariot, he discarded the dashboard and side panels,
ridding it of every last tile of superfluous weight. Without the support of the struts and panels, the riders would have to rely on their own sense of balance and a single loop of rope spliced to the footplate to steady themselves over the roughest ground. Finally, he lubricated the wheel hubs with the black grease from the desert well. Under Taita's supervision, they went over the harness an inch at a time, and Mintaka, Mariaka, and their maids sat up late into the night, stitching and double-stitching the joints and seams. Then they chose the weapons they would carry, rolling the javelins and the arrows to detect any imperfection, suspending them on the special balance board Taita had designed, adding a bead of lead at haft or head, until they were perfect. They sharpened the points so that they would bite and hold in the targets. They resoled their sandals and filed the bronze cleats into spikes. They shaped new leather guards to protect their forearms from the whip of the bowstring and the javelin thong. They selected 3 swords each, for the bronze blades often snapped in the heat of combat. They sharpened the edges, then burnished them with powdered pumice stone until they could shave the hair from their own forearms. They cured and twisted spare bowstrings to be carried as belts tied round their waists. Other than leather helmets and jerkins, they would wear no armour on the road to lighten the load that Dov and Krus must draw. They worked behind the locked doors of the workshop, so that no others would learn of their preparations. But above all, they trained and practiced, built up their strength and stamina, and the trust of the horses. For Dov and Krus, the fire would be the worst of the ordeal. They built their own fires out in the desert, stacking faggots of wood and bundles of dry straw. They let the horses see the flames and smell the smoke, then blindfolded them. Though at first Krus balked and whinnied with terror, in the end he would run blind, trusting the man upon his back, so close to the crackling flames that they singed his mane. Mintaka and Merikara spent long hours during the waiting days in the newly renovated Temple of Hathor, sacrificing for their men and praying for the protection and intervention of the goddess on their behalf.